This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra, where we bring you the soul of sexuality. I'm your host, Francesca Gentile. And with us today, we have Dr. Linda Savage.
So an erotic encounter is basically an experience where there's pleasurable touch, that there's a connection, and that you end up feeling good about yourself and each other.
Great chemicals that are happening during sex, released during sexuality, like, you know, a good long run.
Right. And the longer we allow ourselves to bathe in it, literally bathe in that energy, the better. But I think women really understand intuitively the sense of ecstasy around sexuality, because assuming they've had some good sexual experiences in their lives, they've gotten to that place where they just are rolling in bliss.
Linda is a PhD licensed psychologist and sex therapist who's been exploring the mystery of sexual healing for over 25 years. She's a diplomate of the American Board of Sexology, and she specializes in working with couples on a wide variety of sexual issues, and is the author of Reclaiming Goddess Sexuality, A New View of Female Sexuality, Blending Ancient Wisdom with Current Clinical Knowledge. Linda, I'm delighted to have you here with us.
And I'm delighted to be here.
Linda, I love that you were talking about in your biography, which I read earlier, about that combining of ancient wisdom with current clinical knowledge. What is an example of that combination?
Well, a great example that I use all the time is now we have the fMRI imaging to prove that when one falls in love, your brain is on drugs. That's a wonderful crossover, because the poetry, the experience has been described for centuries, and now we've got the pictures.
And how does that brain on drugs relate to the ancient wisdom, the goddess wisdom of sexuality?
Well, the goddess wisdom, or what I call that because it comes from cultures where women were honored, is that our sexuality is the life force, and that it is a pathway to experiencing the sacred, the divine. It is something that can lead us to altered states, that it is a healing experience to the whole body. And when we understand the process that's there, just one piece of it is the falling in love piece. There's several others. But then it's like, okay, we can put together ancient healing, ancient concepts of sexuality, which is very ecstatic and enhanced, with experiences that we actually have. And people these days like to know, oh, there's proof. There's a certain neurotransmitter that's firing in this state.
So what you're saying is there's an actual biology.
Yeah, there's a biology behind the ecstasy.
Okay, and that in a sense we can look at it both technically as, this is what happens, and then we can look at it in spiritually.
That's correct. And you know, what I do is I bridge language. I can talk, I'm probably not as flowery as you might be, but I can talk this sort of more sacred language. And when I work with folks, they're pretty much your, you know, average people, maybe seeking a little bit more because they know I'm into this goddess stuff. But they're regular folk, and they need to bridge the language so that there's a bit of a ground from the context of, you know, what appears to be a more scientific knowledge. But the fact of the matter is, helping someone shape their experience and helping someone understand from the context of that help is part of what, you know, what we do when we're working with couples.
That's so great. Is there some common issues, if you had to name maybe 3 to 5 common issues, if you can, that couples might come to a sex therapist to work with? Do you hear any themes?
Well, of course, desire discrepancy is the number one issue that comes to us when someone comes for a sexual issue. Sometimes I have couples that will come well, we have problems in our marriage, and then we uncover, you know, the sexual part. So desire discrepancy is one of those really fascinating headings around which so many possible dilemmas are occurring. You know, our sexuality with another is a dance. It's a dance with ourselves as well. But when you add another person, you have all these complexities and these wonderful ways in which we cue each other, or the language we use, and all of the ways that we interact as a dance. And desire discrepancy is one of those rich areas where you begin to go into this wonderful territory and begin to discover what, you know, what's happening. And, you know, often people say, okay, let's get to the root of the problem and fix it. And, you know, I try to help them go, no, there are all these puzzle pieces. And there's this valley I want you to think about going to where it's about pleasure and not fixing. You know, and so you kind of you work with people, and then when they glaze over, you begin to use the science so they can go, oh, okay, this lady isn't just, you know, off in La La Land. There is something here that, you know, matters a lot. So that's why I like to do that bridging.
Let's go a little bit deeper into that desire discrepancy. How does the goddess sexuality help with desire discrepancy?
I love the question. The point of view that it, not only is mine, but also several other folks in the field, is that we've got two models, essentially, and the cultural model is a performance model. Sex is an act that you do, your plumbing functions or it doesn't function, you either have desire or you don't, you know, what's wrong, who's got, you know, whatever. That's a very performance model, and it's seen as sex equals intercourse, the goal is orgasm, and good sex is a good performance. And if you look at all the vast majority of magazines and things that are written in the media, it is all enhancing, looking at, can you perform better? And, of course, there's a huge anxiety in our culture. Everyone, not everyone, but many, many folks go, I don't think I'm normal. Something's wrong with my performance. So what goddess sexuality, what I did when I first wrote the book, and I've continued to teach it more and more, is it says, no, if we look at the goal, it's pleasure. Now, often for men, they go, well, sure, I understand that. But what they're thinking of is only the orgasm. You know, pleasure equals orgasm. And I can't tell you how many couples in Southern California where you think there's a lot of openness and so on, where they're still stuck in that, you know, performance model. And if you say, you start talking about pleasure or pleasuring, it's all about making an orgasm happen.
Well, yep. If it's not about making the orgasm happen,
I know.
Then what is defined pleasure?
Okay. I like to use the word erotic encounter so that I get out of the word sex because it's so specifically oriented towards intercourse. So an erotic encounter is basically an experience where there's pleasurable touch, that there's a connection, and that you end up feeling good about yourself and each other. Now, that makes it very, very broad. And when I first present that idea to couples, they kind of look at me with this blank look like, what is she talking about? And so to shape that, to help couples get out of this desire discrepancy, which is often, I don't want to have the kind of sex you want to have. You know, and that's when I first wrote the book for women, it was saying, all right, you have, women, have a perspective. We have a way of being. Now, women are uniquely different, of course, but there's a way of being that's a very different model than everything is the phallus, everything is intercourse, and my job is to serve my man. You know, that's part of that performance model. So to allow couples to open up and go, okay, wow, that's a pretty broad definition. How do you pleasure? And then we'll talk about pleasuring and open it up in such a wide range that it's possible for almost anything to happen as long as there's a feeling of connection and there's some touch involved.
You know, I want to talk much more about pleasure and
yeah.
Also about more about including the phallus, the penis in pleasure. I'm guessing that you don't want to, you know, disinclude it.
Oh, absolutely not. No, they're wonderful. But both men and women get really hung up because if it's not working, then it seems like the game is over.
Absolutely. And I'd love to talk about this more after our break. And when we come back to talk more with Linda Savage, PhD and licensed psychologist and sex therapist, on uncovering goddess sexuality after a word from our sponsor.
Listen to Sex, Love, and Intimacy, a podcast providing weekly audio workshops for your pleasure and connection on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra, bringing you the soul of sex. Today's guest is Linda Savage, a diplomate of the American Board of Sexology, specializes in working with couples on sexual issues, and the author of Reclaiming Goddess Sexuality. Linda, we were just talking about pleasure and expanding pleasure so that it's much more open for the couple. Would you talk a little bit more about that? In fact, maybe give us a picture or a window of what a pleasurable encounter might look like or might look like between you and your husband.
Okay. One option, you know, because moving into the space to be able to be sensual and then sexual is a piece of this, and Tantra calls it making a sacred space. But an example in my own life, we have this wonderful built-in jacuzzi tub in our own private bathroom. And so for us to take the time to relax both into ourselves and into each other, it's big enough for both of us to just relax into this wonderful tub. Now, I personally don't care for sex in a bathtub, but I love connecting with my husband, looking at him and talking about whatever we're excited about or things that are going on. We don't use this as our time to deal with issues. This is the time to kind of talk about our hopes and dreams and wonderful stuff and begin to move out of our day to day and into, wow, this feels good. This feels good being with you. And then shift, obviously for me it would be getting out of the bathtub, into some kind of touch or holding or even eye gazing that has this feeling of being seen and being known. And sometimes, and this is often common for couples, you could get into massage, you can get into playful tussling. There's all kinds of ways to kind of move into being with each other and getting into pleasure, just sinking in and surrendering to your own feeling of, and then giving and receiving in a kind of a way that each person is feeling a part of the scenario, you know, and that's always an interesting part of the dance. So that's one example of moving into pleasure, which is a personal as well as a shared experience.
So what I'm hearing in the moving into pleasure versus the goal-oriented sexuality is it sounds like it's slowing down, reaching for that goal, reaching for that orgasm, reaching for that intercourse, and really taking a little bit more time. You mentioned necking, you know, maybe bathing, talking about things that you enjoy together, touching, caressing, holding, looking into one another's eyes, is just really bringing back a sense of maybe sensuality, also some of those things that we more naturally do when we first fall in love under those drugs.
Building that connection, that sense of here you are, here I am.
Yeah, and how does this work
Go ahead. Sorry. I also see couples do role play as a way to moving into that space. So again, there's different styles. So maybe one wants to put on sexy clothing and then, you know, act out a play. That works well. Some couples do all kinds of fun role play.
Well, when role-playing, do you mean like Romeo and Juliet, Anthony and Cleopatra? Do you mean, you know, dressing up in leather with a whip? What do you mean by role-playing?
Could be any of the things that titillate the sense of, hey, we're really going to have some fun here. And, you know, that's another way. There's connected sex. There's role-playing sex. There's going into your fantasy kind of sex. You know, there's a lot of ways to move into it. But for me, if you lose the purpose, which is to be in your own pleasure as well as available to pleasure your partner, then it's not a rote, we do this, we do this, we do this, orgasm happens, and boom, we're done.
So it becomes more of a total experience
Yeah.
of connection.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And how long would you suggest that a couple set aside? Because this is going to take a time. This is not the, you know, the 5-minute quickie in and out. Thank you, ma'am. How long should a couple set aside to really explore this together?
Okay. This is always a great question, because when I work with couples, often both of them are working and they have kids. So to be realistic about it and not set up even more anxiety with people who go, oh my gosh, now I got to set aside this. You know, there's nothing wrong with the hug, hello kind of sex, what people call quickies. But if that becomes the routine, then you're losing the sense of self. So my thought is, if you had a Sunday afternoon, you know, 3 hours, let's say, that's not a terrible amount of time. And you might have to schedule that, you know, to actually go, okay, we're going to spend this time. So to me, it's not how often you do it, but it's that you do on some regular basis, set aside that time for each other, and then you don't get into eating in a movie, because often the date that people do is we go out to a movie, we have a big meal, and now we just don't feel like much of anything because we don't have any energy. So to me, I like either, you know, mid-morning, afternoon. And obviously, it's got to be at a time when you don't have a lot of work stressors. And for some couples, it means getting the kids with somebody, you know, to watch so that you really have that time to do it. Now, goddess sexuality, if you look at the ancient model, wasn't necessarily practiced, you know, everybody was doing it all the time. What typically, as much we know about it, is that they would have certain festivals during the year. And those festivals, part of the purpose was to renew the abundance of the land and renew the connection with the goddess, which they saw as sort of the All Mother. And so there would be 3-day festivals where pretty much what was happening is a little bit like Mardi Gras. And people were expected to have these wonderful making love experiences. They'd go off into the fields. They go, you know. So in a way, I think having time set aside at certain points of the year, whether it's your anniversary or whatever, that works really well.
So what we're really encouraging people is, you know, periodically in a way that works for them to have, you know, a good 3 hours, their own little Mardi Gras, whether there's costumes or not, where they can.
Or a weekend, a one night, overnight.
A weekend and overnight. And, you know, some people say they don't have the time or they don't have the money, but I often think, you know, that, do you have the time to have a divorce? Do you have the money to hire a lawyer?
Right, right.
Is that sometimes this is a priority. It's a glue for the relationship.
And honestly, it's the process of making that happen that builds the excitement, because you want to build some excitement. And you can get a little cabin in the woods. You can borrow a friend's house. I mean, there's lots of ways that it doesn't have to be, you know, 400 a night kind of hotels. In fact, I often think that people do that sort of thing or spend a lot of money on vacation and then end up disappointed because it didn't really fulfill the intention. So, you know, it can happen and it doesn't need to be expensive.
It can be simple. It can be just, you know, hire a babysitter to take the kids out for a walk to the park for a couple of hours.
Exactly.
And, you know, and have fun in the bedroom, one's own bedroom.
Right.
Or one's own living room.
That's what I work with couples, is it's not your job is you seduce me or you got to come on to me. It's you, as a team, you sort of conspire to create this wonderful little time aside and like, oh, goody, you know, and build up that sense of as a team we're creating this. It's an our way rather than, you know, you're the one that's going to make it happen or the other, you know.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, Linda. If we're a man, I might be thinking, you know, I like my penis. I like to have intercourse. I like my ejaculation. Are they saying that I don't get to have intercourse or I don't get to have ejaculation? Or, you know, what's in it for me as a guy?
Right.
I'm, you know, spending my time, my money, you know, talking of all things, you know, looking into one another's eyes, what's in it for me?
Oh, boy. Yeah, often when I talk about the performance model, I see the guy's eyes get big and he's like, what do you mean? You know, when you look at the ancient patterns of the god and the goddess, the concept of being sacred partners together, we're talking about quite a lot of lovemaking as part of it. And what I see when there's allowing this buildup, this teasing, this allowing you to get fully into it and more aroused and and touch and all of that pleasure is, and I hear this from guys that practice Tantra all the time, is that they have actually much more full body orgasm. They actually have experiences that they never thought they could have. So it's not that they can't do that. It's that this rush to do it, and that this is what we're doing here, so let's just get it done. And I see both men and women with that, let's rush and get it done. You know, they're missing 90% of the real pleasurable experience, the ecstatic experience of a sexual encounter.
So what you're saying is that if we're talking from the man's perspective right now, what he gets out of this is that he gets more of his body pleasured.
Exactly.
He will have deeper, richer orgasms. He may, through training or experimentation, mm-hmm. discover ways to have full body orgasms, or I think what they call ejaculation, where the body is going through an orgasmic bliss state,
right.
and there's not ejaculation, so that he can keep going and doesn't have to concern himself with his refractory period, how
right,
long it
right.
takes
to ride the wave,
have an erection again.
Yep.
And I want to talk when we come back more about what's in it for the women and what both men or women individually can do to support this goddess sexuality. After our break and a word from our sponsors, we'll be back to talk with Linda Savage, author of Reclaiming Goddess Sexuality.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, Life in an Orgasm-Based Community, a weekly online audio program where orgasmic innovators share the intricacies of their practice on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra, bringing you the soul of sex. Today, we're back with Linda Savage, who is a member of the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, as well as a diplomate on the American Board of Sexology and a licensed psychologist. Linda, we were just talking about what was in it for men to delve into this goddess sexuality and expand their sense of pleasure. Is it the same for women, or is there something different that women get out of this?
Actually, it is and it isn't. Women naturally recognize, this is an odd thing to say, but I think women really understand intuitively the sense of ecstasy around sexuality, because assuming they've had some good sexual experiences in their lives, they've gotten to that place where they just are rolling in bliss. And they've experienced that sometimes. Men, you know, they may cut themselves off from that experience. But
why would they do that?
Huh?
Why would they cut themselves off?
Well, the theory is that they get flooded with oxytocin and it makes them sleepy, okay? That's one theory, anyway. But, you know, once the idea is there and you begin to play with it and explore it, you know, it can go on. But for women, it's being able to surrender to the self, I mean, our sexuality does not belong to somebody else. It's not something we give, even though our culture says this. We don't give something, you know, the guy gets it. It's really a deep experience of your own ecstatic nature and sacred dancer. So, and by the way, dance is one of the ways that women can really move into that wonderful state. But for women, it's also the sense of connection. It's the feeling, I mean, both men and women want to feel good about themselves, and we all believe we should be sexual beings, I mean, most people anyway. And so there is that good feeling of, yes, we had this connection. But, you know, for a woman, it's also an enlivening of the life force. It is amazing, all of the benefits. I mean, and I wouldn't even get technical and medical about it. So for both men and women, there's tremendous benefits, but it's not just we did wall socket sex and now we're going to be healthier. It's that we allowed our whole body to get into an ecstatic experience where it just feels good, and we allow that magnetic energy. It really is. It kind of generates a magnetic field that is very healing.
So what we're saying for women, and both women and men, is it awakens the body. It revitalizes the body. Literally, we feel good. There's great chemicals that are happening during release during sexuality, like, you know, a good long run.
Right,
there's
right.
Endorphins.
And the longer we allow ourselves to bathe in it, literally bathe in that energy, the better.
And I've actually heard studies as well that say that women who have, I think it's more than 3 orgasms a week, look 10 years younger than their counterparts. So it can be a youthifying tonic.
I love these studies. I always think, how the heck do they get these? But yes, there's sex makes you young. But you know what? The newspapers then go, okay, have sex 3 times a week. So the guys go to their wives and go, okay, see, we're supposed to have sex 3 times a week. And they miss the point, because to me, it's not that, again, you just do this wall socket thing, that you actually generate this really delicious energy. And the orgasm is only a piece of it. And if you don't give it time to build, the orgasm is pretty short-lived.
Exactly. And yet I like to think of it as, in a way, almost like a spiritual practice, or like working out or anything else. That if I had to wait until I wanted to work out at the gym, I would never, ever work out at the gym. I always have another reason.
Right.
But when I work out, then I feel better because I release endorphins and I feel good in my body. And I actually look at sex that way, being a mother myself and being very busy, is that I schedule it. I slow down. I, like you said, bathe or take some time talking or looking into each other's eyes or, you know, caressing. And pretty soon I'm in the mood. I don't worry about starting when I'm in the mood.
Right.
I trust that this more goddess sexuality that you're talking about, one of the outcomes is that in the mood will happen along the way.
Yes, because you're allowing yourself the time to surrender. That's the word I love, surrender into your own body. And for mothers in particular, it's critical because there's so many other demands. You know, literally I hear women say, I don't want anybody to touch me, leave me alone, you know, kind of thing. And you're right. And trusting that you can create that space with a partner. And sometimes it takes therapeutic work to kind of get through some of the longstanding irritations between a couple. So for some people, it may take a little bit of, I want to say, consciousness-raising work. But yes, for women, it's allowing themselves that time to really have that wonderful experience and to trust that their partner will touch them in ways that allow them to feel this buildup and to feel more excited, not immediately, let's go for the genitals and let's rub and, you know, get it over with, which often, you know, I think is why there's a lot of disappointment.
It's one of the things that I've often thought about is that men often touch women the way that they want to be touched.
Yes.
So that...
a lot of friction, a lot of rubbing.
Exactly. But, you know, I've asked my beloved, if I walked up to you and just grabbed your penis and said, you've got a great, you know, cock and, you know, do you want to fuck? And then just went for that would be fine for him.
Mm-hmm. A lot of guys go, yeah, I'd love it. But, you know, I have some cases where... essentially, that's happening, or the woman is like, let's just do it and get it over with. And eventually, the guys do start feeling like objects.
But they've never had that experience in our culture. So, my sense is that men have a secret longing to be sexual objects,
mm-hmm.
and that's why they often reflect that to us.
Right.
And I agree with you that probably if they had been raised with that, just people just grabbing them all the time, that they would come to a point where they'd say, well, can we have a longer time? It just depends on what you've been, you know, what you're depleted in as to what you long for sometimes.
Correct.
And is there something that each partner can do individually, if they're coupled or if they're single, that will help them, you know, sort of deepen into this expanded goddess sexuality, even with themselves?
Yes. I believe the most ecstatic kind of experiences are really your own personal spiritual enlightenment experiences. And you may have them with a partner present, but you're having that experience. And it could happen in an individual. Ray Stubbs describes an experience he had out in the desert many, many years ago. He's written books on Tantra and so on, where he had a heart orgasm, and it went through all his chakras, and he wasn't even touching himself. It was just this amazing ecstatic experience that moved through his body. Now he has practiced for many years a lot of tantric concepts. So men, it's a little harder to, you know, because men do self-pleasuring and they have a good old time, but there still is a tendency to rush to orgasm, and there's still a lot of heavy friction and let's, you know, run to the goal here.
So what would you suggest for men? You mentioned words like heart orgasm and chakra.
Right.
Let's start with our men first. If there's any men listening,
yeah,
they're now getting ready to get in bed with themselves.
Right.
And they're wanting to try this. You know, they're open-minded, experimental. Let's try this.
Right.
How should they touch their bodies? What are their chakras? what are we talking about here?
If we want to kind of create a wonderful experiment, it would be first get into some deep breathing. You know, that's a way to get in your body to start with. Just breathe so that you expand your diaphragm and really allow your body to, you know, to feel your breathing, all right? Next, what you could do before you do any kind of touching or rubbing is to actually do pelvic rocking. That, I found, is one of the most helpful ways for men and women to feel that energy, because when you do pelvic rocking, you can also squeeze the pelvic muscles. And for men, often they know how to do that because they can move their penises and make them dance and stuff like that. So that pelvic rocking and squeezing gets that real groin feeling going before you do any kind of touching.
So at this point, he's not touching himself.
No,
he's breathing deeply.
And doing pelvic rocking.
And what do you mean by pelvic rocking?
Let's see. It's one of those exercises we do in exercise classes. So you would rock your hips all the way back as if you were arching. You can put your legs, kind of bend your legs a little bit. So you rock back
if you're lying in bed,
arching. And then you squeeze your buttocks so that you're rocking your pelvis forward. So if you're looking at, if you have an erection, you know, it would be moving towards the flat of the bed and then up again, you know, or if there's no erection, which is fine. You're basically arching backwards and then tucking. I guess that's the best way to describe it. And when you do that with the breath, you begin to feel, you know, that tingly thing that is described. Mm. And you begin to feel this energy. Now, the next step for men is not to just completely focus on the genitals. Because if you get, I got the tingly feeling, now I'm going to start rubbing, then you're going to move into whatever the specific touch that works for you to move it to orgasm. So a lot of this has to do with allowing the energy to build. Instead of with anxiety, which is an early pattern, men want to get it in before the girl changes her mind or before the parents come home. I mean, there's a lot of ways in which rushing has become part of their pattern. And so to let that energy move through the body as they're breathing and doing the pelvic, and then to begin to touch in peripheral ways, not touching specifically the genitals, but, you know, thigh area, which is very close. You know, some men are sensitive in their nipples and touching in ways that raise the energy. You can feel that energy moving. And then as you breathe, imagine the energy moving upwards through your body instead of pooling all specifically in the genital area. And it's pretty amazing, men that allow themselves to prolong the experience that way. And then they can move into the kind of touch that feels good, but let it go slow. You know, no rush here. See how they can kind of let it feel good and last.
So once again, they would want to put some time aside, you know, more than
Absolutely.
5 minutes, you know, 15, 20 minutes, put some time aside with it. And after the breathing and the rocking, just begin to kind of touch and explore their own body.
Right.
It's still kind of, for a while, it sounds like, avoiding the genital area
right.
because, you know.
Yeah, tease it. The area. I mean, it's a very delicious experience to be teased as long as you know. It's going to go somewhere eventually. But a lot of men find that very anxiety-producing.
In what way?
Well, as I said, early experiences are, wow, I might lose my opportunity if I don't get it in and we get it on. So, you know, that allowing yourself to say, hey, look, I'm here with me. Nobody's going to abandon me. I'm here. And just allow yourself to let it go slow. The fear, it might not happen, you know, somehow.
And what do you hear from men when they practice this? What do they discover when they start slowing down and developing a, you know, kind of this ability to have, you know, expand their arousal, the time they have arousal, awaken, you know, sensual feelings in their entire body? What do they report after they experiment?
Well, most of the people I've talked to about this are already practicing Tantra, so their mindset is there. It's not common that I have men who just come in as, you know, your regular guy who wants to go there. So I tend to work more with the couple part of it rather than the individual. But the men that do practice this and work with it are the ones that say they have the most amazing body sensation and all over experiences, even without an actual orgasm. And then when they move to that final thing, the orgasm is so much more fulfilling because it's not so pooled in one little area.
And how is this similar or different for women? If a woman is wanting to deepen into her delicious goddess body sexuality, how would you describe it? And maybe we should take a brief break, and then you can come back and tell us more about how it would be for the women.
Okay.
And we'll return right after this break, a few words from our sponsors, with Dr. Linda Savage, author of Reclaiming Goddess Sexuality, member of the board of American Associations of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, licensed psychologist.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, Guest Speaker Interviews, a companion program to the weekly audio show, Life in an Orgasm-Based Community, on personallifemedia.com. Push into the unknown with visiting sexperts at One Taste San Francisco on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra, bringing you the soul of sex with our fabulous guest, Dr. Linda Savage, PhD, MFT, AASECT, and amazing couples therapist, author of Reclaiming Goddess Sexuality, who's about to tell us how this self-pleasuring might be different for women or the same for women as it is for men.
Yes, well, I have a lot more opportunities because sometimes women will come to me as individuals and either have had a not a great experience, et cetera. So they're wanting to reclaim their goddess. They're wanting to reclaim it. And the pelvic rocking and breathing is absolutely something that is true for women, and the self-pleasuring and allowing, giving themselves permission. There's a couple other pieces, I think, for women that are helpful. One, for many women, there may have been some violating experiences in their past, and so guided imagery to make it safe is one of the things I often start with. I have a meditation called Your Secret Garden, and imagining going to this garden that's your special garden, and it has boundaries around it. And that helps women begin to give themselves permission for their own private and enriching experience. The other piece that I think is different for women is that women have a lot of issues with their yonis, and that is the female genitals. I like the word yoni because it isn't fraught with all of these sometimes negative connotations. And so I have some practices for women to begin to love and own that aspect of the self and understand how beautiful they really are. And I think that's different for men. Often, unless they have issues with size, they're pretty proud of their family jewels, et cetera. But for women, that's often. But other than that, the breathing and the rocking and the squeezing the pelvic muscles is a very important part of it.
Is this the kind of information that they can find a lot more of at your website or in your book?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. My website is www.goddesstherapy.com, which is GoddessTherapy.com. And I have those exercises in the book. I have a couple exercises. So it's chock full of a lot of very practical information as well as some wonderful stuff about the ancient cultures that worship the feminine.
And for people who are in Southern California, they can always look you up or see you.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who live in another part of the country, do you have any suggestions for them on resources that they can search for, either other books or websites that they can go to or even something to Google?
Well, I imagine you could Google goddess sexuality. Then there's also tantra.com, which is a great site. There's wonderful DVDs. There's one on sacred sexuality that I often recommend for couples to watch to get the idea. I think it's called The Ancient Secrets of Sacred Sexuality. As far as finding a therapist, because sometimes you do need a third party, I would say definitely for some couples it's important. You can go to asect.org, AASECT.org, and they have by region, find a therapist, someone who's at least trained and has some experience with sexuality. Oh, there's a ton of books. I warn against the how-to cookbooks. Those are the ones that I get concerned about, because if it's all about positions and rubbing better, harder, you know, then unfortunately it takes you right into the performance model. So that's my recommendation, is just keep in mind that this is a whole body pleasure experience that includes connection to the partner rather than perform better.
And Linda, I'm so enjoying this deepening, expanded, more whole body goddess version of sexuality that you're discussing. Is there anything else in the last few minutes that we have that you'd really want to leave us with?
Yeah, what I see as the cutting edge of the future, and I see people who are interested in listening to this program, who are already wanting to explore sacred sexuality, are people who also are in this forefront of what I think of as kind of a new wave, a new movement. And it has to do with the partnership model. We talk about people as partners, but the real concept of partner, where I am there meeting you eye to eye as an equal with my own perspective, that I am going to stay in my truth, you're going to stay in your truth, and we're going to really work with this as a partnership. That's a very new idea. We have not in our culture had models. I don't think in any culture in the last 3,000 years have we had a model of true co-equal partnership. And a lot of men get a little scared when I talk about this, but again, what's in it for them is having a real partner and someone who's there, who's not just going through the motions. And I don't mean only in sexuality, but I mean in every aspect of the life. And it is not just, oh, no big deal, because we don't have a good model for it. But we do have lots of information coming recently, good couples therapy and good books about couples work that help in this partner model, which is really a very exciting movement that's happening right now in our country.
And you're talking about partnership in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
People have been raising children together for thousands of years, and in
Correct.
One way have been partnering. But you're really talking about partnering on a totally new level.
Yeah, that's absolutely. At a conscious level, on a co-equal level, where you keep working through and you stay right there. You don't just accommodate, or you don't just kind of hide part of yourself. You're really showing up. And for women, that's been tough, because we've had a very different model. That's why I talk about goddess sexuality, because women are going to need to get that sense of the strength of their divinity, their feminine divinity, in order to be there. And it's not the same as I'm going to go bust your balls. It's not at all. You know. So it's
really a courageous honesty for both men and women.
Both men and women, absolutely.
To reveal their, you know, for men, the edge might be to reveal more of their feelings.
Absolutely. Being vulnerable.
And for women, that growth edge might be to reveal more of their boundaries or more of their opinions.
Yeah, and what they really want.
And it sounds like there's a point when you're cooking a new relationship stew here where things might be a little unformed or a little uncomfortable, but by having each person really walk that courageous edge of revealing themselves in a new way,
that's
something even more amazing will be created, really beautiful.
Very amazing. It's very growthful, very growthful.
Well, I just want to thank you so much, Linda, for joining us here today. We've had the pleasure of listening to Dr. Linda Savage, marriage and family therapist, licensed psychologist, who for over 17 years has been treating couples with relationships and sexual issues. And thank you for joining us on Sex, Tantra, and Kama.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.